Welcome to the Everything EC podcast. I'm your host, Carla Ward, and joining me today is my dear friend, Alyssa Sanford, a former teacher turned instructional designer and certified Enneagram coach. She provides personalized coaching sessions and corporate training programs by blending her teaching background and Enneagram expertise. Alyssa has a passion for empowering individuals to take ownership of their personal growth so that they can cultivate meaningful relationships and become who they were meant to be. Today, she's here to talk about how we can use Enneagram numbers with our teams to improve our team dynamics. Welcome to the show, Alyssa. I am so excited that we are finally getting together to talk about Enneagrams, something that no matter how many times I've tried to do it on my own, I just can't seem to grasp the concept. So welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here, Carla.
So Alyssa, before we dive into Enneagrams, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So my name is Alyssa Sanford. I am a former teacher. I worked with deaf and hard of hearing students and then taught second and third grade for a little bit before transitioning to instructional design.
Awesome. And what is instructional design?
I get asked that all the time. So essentially what I'm doing is I'm creating instructional materials to help people be better at their job. So I create new hire onboarding. I create instructional led PowerPoints, courses, study guides, that sort of thing.
That is amazing. And something that definitely in childcare, I think we need more of, because I know with consulting, you go into centers and you're like, well, you've got a parent handbook, but it's from 1970. Like, it hasn't been updated.
Yes.
Right?
Well, and as a teacher, like, the curriculum design was one of my favorite parts. Of course, I loved working with the kids, but the actual, like, designing hands-on learning materials was my favorite creative outlet. So to be able to do that full-time is exciting.
That is so awesome. Okay. So let's talk about Enneagram numbers. First things first, can you tell the audience what is an Enneagram?
Absolutely. So the Enneagram is a typology system that kind of has 9 distinct types that are different personalities.
Okay. So is it like Zodiac? Like, I know I'm a Capricorn and I definitely can relate to a lot of the subtext of what a Capricorn is. Is it similar?
It is and it's not. So a lot of personality typing systems kind of focus more on traits and they tend to be kind of surface level. The Enneagram goes a little bit deeper because its intention is personal growth and development. So it's not just identifying what you are. It's then identifying what you are and seeing what are your blind spots? What are your challenges? What are some things that you can work on to basically become the best version of yourself?
Ooh, that is so up my alley. And clearly I missed that part of my research because the way you just explained it, I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But I swear, like when I Google it, I'm just like, okay, I'm supposed to be a number. I don't know what that means.
Yes, exactly. Well, and it goes a lot deeper than just the number. It's an extremely complex system and there's so many different layers. And I think that's why this system is so accurate compared to other personality typing systems.
Okay. All right. So give me like the basic rundown, I guess, of the basic numbers. Like how many are there? What are they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I guess just go with that. And then I have a follow-up question once we talk about it, I think.
Absolutely. So there are 9 basic Enneagram types, and each Enneagram type has a core desire and a core fear associated with it. And so that's really how you identify your type. So 9 types. The first one is the reformer. Sometimes this one is called the perfectionist. I prefer the reformer because I feel like a lot of people would consider themselves a perfectionist. So I just prefer the reformer title for that one. But their core desire is to be good or right or perfect. And so their core fear is to be corrupt or wrong. And each of the 9 types also has kind of a passion or a vice. And so the passion of a type 1 is anger. For a type 2, the helper, also called the giver, their core desire is to be loved. So their core fear is obviously to be unloved, right? and their passion is pride.
Okay.
Type three is the achiever, also called the performer sometimes. Their core desire is to be valuable, and so their core fear is worthlessness, and their passion is self-deceit.
Ooh, okay.
And then type four is called the individualist, also called the romantic. Their core desire is to be unique and special, and so their core fear is to be ordinary or have no identity. And
ooh,
their
I think,
passion.
Sorry to interrupt you. I think
no,
that's,
you're fine.
Right away, I was like, ooh, okay, I think that's me. But we'll keep going, because like I was like, okay, I'm a little bit of one, okay, a little bit two, okay, three, and then four. I was like, oh no, I am. Like, my biggest fear in life is to be boring. It's to be boring. Like, I just, not so much about being bored, because I'm never bored, but to be boring, like, that's a fear of mine. Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, and I should say, actually, that brought up a great point as you were saying, oh, a little bit of this, a little bit of this. We all have all nine types within us, but okay, just one is more dominant.
Okay.
And it actually has to do with the childhood messages that you received as a child, whether subconsciously or consciously. Obviously, we don't want to blame our parents for who we are, right? But they do shape, you know, what we become, right? So I'll get into childhood messages in just a minute, but I'll finish, if that's okay, finish the ones so far. So we also have on four, passion is envy. For a type five, also called the investigator, their core desire is to be competent. And so their core fear is to be incompetent. And their passion is greed, but not so much about money, but more about hoarding time and knowledge and resources. Then we have the type six, the loyalist. Their core desire is to have security and guidance. And their core fear is to be alone or be without support and guidance. The type seven is called the enthusiast. Their core desire is to be satisfied and fulfilled, and their core fear is being deprived or in pain. Oh, and I missed the type six passion is fear.
Oh, interesting.
Sorry. Type seven, their passion is gluttony. So just always wanting more, but not necessarily in the way of food, but just like more excitement, more adventure, that sort of thing.
Oh gosh. Okay. Now I'm between, now I'm feeling like definitely I can see how we're all a little bit of everything, but I'm between the four and the seven. I think maybe more seven. Okay. Let's hear eight and nine. Cause I know that some people have said I'm a nine, but I honest to God don't know what that means.
Okay, perfect. So the eight is called the challenger, and their core desire is to be in control or independent. And their core fear is vulnerability or weakness.
Well, now I don't know, because that is totally me. Oh my gosh.
Their passion is excess. So excessive energy and intensity.
Oh yeah. I think I might be an eight. Okay.
All right. And then the last basic type is called the peacemaker. So their core desire is to have inner stability or peace of mind. And their core fear is conflict or tension. Their passion is sloth, but not in terms of laziness, but kind of doing every action but the right one and not paying attention to their own desires and feelings.
Oh, that's so interesting, because I don't think I relate to that one at all. And a couple of people are like, are you a nine? And I'm like, I don't know. Definitely. Like, nine is probably out of all of them the one that I'm the least.
I will say, it's so funny when you said that. I was like, oh, a nine. That's interesting. As a coach and as the system works, you're not really supposed to type people, because you don't really know the true motivation and reason why people do the things that they do, right? That's kind of for them to find out. But I will say, I would never have guessed nine for you.
Right? Like, we've been friends for a while, and now saying this, you said peacemaker, I was like, oh, I don't like conflict, but if someone came at me, I'd be ready to put you right where you need to go.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, that's so interesting. Okay, so how does somebody figure out what they are?
That's a great question. I always suggest to take a test first. You do need to be a little bit careful about which test you take, in my opinion, because no test is 100% accurate. But there is an assessment called the IEQ9 assessment. And that one actually takes into consideration the subtypes. So I know I mentioned that it's super complex. So there are nine basic types, but each type has three subtypes. And so that assessment helps you figure out not only your dominant type, but your subtype as well. And the reason why that's important is because some of the subtypes can look very different than the main type. And those are called counter types and is often a reason for people mistyping. So that's why it's really important to not just look at those nine basic types. You really do need to look at that next level. So I would suggest that test. That test is a little bit pricier. I think it's 60 for the standard, but you get a 24-page report
Oh, wow.
detailing like all the different parts of the Enneagram system and how they apply to you. So that one's cool. I would also just say research and really pay attention and start to notice and observe yourself and why you're doing the things that you're doing. Because I think sometimes we can sit and think, oh yeah, I think my motivation is this. But until we're actually like observing ourselves doing things, we don't necessarily fully understand our motivation behind what we're doing. So those would be my two starting points for sure.
I am so excited. I love taking personality quizzes. I'm a 90s teenager, so I was all about, Cosmopolitan, taking the quizzes. I
Yes.
swear we were conditioned to behave that way. But oh no, I will post the link to this quiz in our show notes. So, and the show notes will be below this podcast. So absolutely, if
Awesome.
anybody wants to take it, the link will be there. So it's an ECE podcast. We're talking to early childhood educators. Why would this be a good thing to know about yourself personally, but then also as a whole? Like, why would this be a great thing for your whole center to do so that you all understand your numbers?
Absolutely. So I'll start at the personal level. So knowing your Enneagram type, the whole goal is to become more self-aware, right? Noticing your blind spots, noticing your strengths, noticing kind of, those things that you can work on, noticing how you communicate and interact with people based on your type. Again, great for self-awareness. And going back to what I said about the Enneagram originally, it is for personal growth and development. Like that's the whole point of it. And I think that kind of gets lost because I think, like you've experienced, people just think, oh, I have a type. That's great. But like, that's not the true purpose of the Enneagram. And I think that's why people kind of tend to be like, it's another typing. I don't want to be put in a box. But it's not for that. It's for personal growth and development. So once you kind of know yourself, you can work to get to the healthier side of your type. So I don't want to go too in the weeds with this, but there are nine levels of development for every type. So the first three of those, one through three, are healthy. Four through, what is it, six are average. And then seven through nine are considered unhealthy. And so it's a continuum. You can jump and hop depending on the situation. If you're feeling out of control and stressed out, you might be on the lower levels. If things are going really great, you might be in the healthy. But I know when I first started with the Enneagram, I was able to identify that I was kind of at that lower average level. And so being able to identify that, I was able to see kind of how that affected my motivations and how I interacted with people. And once I kind of became aware of that, I was like, oh, I don't like that. Like when you find your type, you should really kind of feel, I've heard people say, I feel so seen. I feel so understood. I felt a little squeamish, like, oh, like I feel very called out. Like,
I so
oh,
get
yeah, that's
that.
me. That's me. And it can depend on your type too, of how that, makes you feel. So that's just a good kind of indicator if you found your right type or not. But once you do and kind of start to do the work, then you can work to become the healthier side and again, the best version of yourself you can be.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I love that. And like, definitely as we head into 2024, this is such a great thing because we should always be striving to be the best version of ourselves. And I'm a big fan of James Clear's book, Atomic Habits. And I was laughing because I said to somebody the other day, I said, you want to be 1% better today than you were yesterday. But then when I was doing my self-reflection later, I was like, what the heck does that mean? Right? Like, when I really think about it, was, well, how am I going to be 1% better today? Am I going to avoid something? Am I going to do something extra? But when you don't know what direction you're going in, or where you're trying to grow, it can be very difficult to figure out even just 1%.
Absolutely.
Oh, this is
Absolutely.
exciting. This is very exciting. So why would it matter to a team?
So I think the biggest thing, honestly, once you kind of understand your type, is being able to understand the 8 other types and understanding the different perspectives that everybody else has, because not everyone has the same perspective as you. And I think it's the one thing to say it, it's another thing to actually understand it. And so the Enneagram really helps you understand what are the core motivations and fears and desires of these other 8 types, and how does that manifest in their behaviors, in their interactions, in the way they communicate. The Enneagram gives you great insights into kind of triggers of each type, which can be really great in the workplace. If you know that about someone, right, then you can work to avoid that. So it can improve workplace relationships, collaboration, empathy towards others and their perspective, which I feel like nowadays in the world, we need way more of.
Always.
So I just think there are so many benefits to using the Enneagram with your teams. Yeah, I just love it.
Completely agree. Because when you understand each other, you're able to come at it with such a different approach to just being irritated with somebody, or to your point, saying, I understand, but really understanding, it just makes such a stronger team. We are, as you know, in a childcare crisis. We have childcare centers closing down. I read an article yesterday. A childcare center in Hawaii is shutting down after 70 years because they don't have the staffing. So, right? And I've been trying to connect with other centers. Like, what is it that's causing the turnover? And I think from an outside lens, everybody thinks it's the pay. And we know the pay is crap. We know this. But when you really start to talk to the people that are staying and asking them why they're staying, it's because of that team dynamic. They're staying because they love their center, they love their families, and they love their team. And when you have a strong team, you feel supported when things get hard, which they always do in childcare. So I feel like this is such a great toolkit to have.
Absolutely. I wish more teams would have it. I read somewhere that people don't leave jobs, they leave people. Like, employees don't leave jobs, they leave people. And I think that that sums it up right there, why this is so important and to have this work with your team. And even thinking like at a leadership level, you know, understanding what motivates your teammates, understanding what motivates your coworkers, understanding kind of, you know, the fear that's kind of underlying their behavior. And how do you kind of help them work through that in the context of the job, right? And I feel like that can be so supportive. And again, having people feel understood and seen and valued in the workplace, the Enneagram can really help with that.
It's like taking love languages to a whole new level.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I wish everybody could see my desk right now, because since we started talking, I have 9 post-it notes all over my desk because I just couldn't write fast enough, because I'm just getting so excited about, you know, understanding the numbers, but also understanding how we can take the idea or the concept of Enneagrams and understanding our teammates, understanding ourselves, and putting it towards growth and development, which as educators, we are all for. And just heading into 2024, being the best possible year and being our best possible selves. Oh my gosh.
I love this system so much.
Honestly, and I can understand why. Because you can't do it and not unhear it, right? Once you know it, you have to do something about it. And I love that.
Absolutely.
Alyssa, this has been absolutely incredible. I will make sure to put your information in our show notes along with a Calendly link, because we've talked about coaching and I know that you do some one-on-one. So I'll make sure to put your link in our show notes so that people can connect with you further. And thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Carla. This has been amazing. I really appreciate you having me on.